brothers and sisters. How are you all today? How are you all today? Very subtle, of course, but good. Any of you not good, don't come here. Today is Vesak celebration. Today's topic is significance of Vesak. Let me see. Anyone who is new here today? Are you new? You're not new. Are you the same as the one yesterday? Are you the same as last week? So you're different, ma? That means you're new. We are all new, actually. In a way, we are all new. My hand has a lot of... I think I'm an actor. How about here? How about you? Are you new?
No.
No? So, I haven't seen you for a while.
Yeah.
Where have you been?
At home.
At home? What are you doing at home?
Playing.
Yeah. Why don't you come here and play with me? You're afraid I can overtake you at a game? Who is new here today? Let me see on my right. I think she looks new, huh? The one who... Have you introduced yourself before? Yeah, you keep on moving around. You attended before. You introduced before?
Sorry?
Introduce yourself before? Also introduced before. Oh. You all know her? Okay, I'll take the word for it. The guy behind you looks new. Also attended before?
Not here.
Not here. Have you introduced yourself before? Never, okay. By the way, right? Tell us your name.
Kelvin.
Yeah. And how do you guys know about this group?
Marcelino
introduced me. Marcel from India. Welcome. I should not change my hands. My right hand seems to have a lot of... Is that okay, right? Let's see how long that will be my right hand. So welcome to SBC. Very quickly, somebody want to offer candle? But I don't let her start. Or not offer candle. Yeah. It's the nature of life, you know. You don't get what you want. So it's the duty of Shifu to make sure you see the Dharma. You see the reality of life. So do you want to offer it now? Do you want?
Shifu
start. No, you want Shifu to start, then Shifu you want. You want to offer it now? You want. Then okay, we start our talk. Or do you want to offer it later? You want to offer it now or later? Huh? Now, okay, now we offer it. There's two choices, offer later or offer next year. Choose one.
Later.
Ah, okay, good. Later. I once saw this my right hand is very significance of Vesak. have you have not heard the talk about significance of result? Oh, really? You all haven't heard before in your whole life? That's quite amazing. No, serious, serious, I'm serious. Never heard before. How many? You? Never heard before. Never heard before. You also never heard before. Okay, the few of you stay back, then I will explain. Sometimes when I'm invited to give such a talk, I'm a bit perplexed. Yeah, I'm a bit troubled. You know? Okay, not troubled. But I'm a bit like, what else can I say about the significance of result that people do? You know? We can make this talk, this session very short, by listing it down. 1, 2, and 3. The first significance of Waisak is we are celebrating the birth of the Buddha. The second is the enlightenment of the Buddha. And the third is the great passing away. What we call Mahaparinibbana. In a nutshell, this is the significance of Visa. Yeah. What we are celebrating. How many of you have heard of these three things? Cut off, right? So, what is the significance of these three events? Earlier on, I was at the Buddhist library. Wanted to go there and pay respects to Bhante Dhammaratana, but he's in Sri Lanka. And Bhante Jyoti was there, so I pay respect to him. Ancient Pastor was there. And then they asked me whether I'd like to stay for the puja, because he was close to 11. So I look at Bhante Jyoti, how? Then he said, stay. Yeah, stay. Then before I know it, Wing Pai come over and say, Bhante, later ask Grandpa Chankwan to give a talk. He will not say no. So I end up giving a talk. Yeah. So I covered part one. So for those who want to know about part one, you can see whether they did recording. No, I don't think they did recording. Significance of the birth, enlightenment, and the great passing. You all celebrate your birthday, right? How many people celebrate your birthday? No. How? For you to raise your hand, I have to ask how many of you celebrate your birthday? I'm asking you, how many people celebrate your birthday? How many of you have 10% celebrating your birthday every year? 10? At least 10? Not bad. Above 10? So you see, if you join our monthly birthday celebration, you at least have 20 over 30%. So keep a lookout. Usually on the second Sunday of every month we celebrate. Yeah. So, while you're alive, there's less than 10% celebrating your birthday. After you pass away, how many people will be celebrating your birthday? Do you want people to still celebrate your birthday after you pass away? After you pass away, then you make a wish. May I be reborn as a ghost? And then come back happy, and then hang around and wait until your birthday and go around. Joking. Tomorrow is my birthday. Remember to celebrate. Yeah. Then after, quickly go to the next person. Don't read. You buy the birthday cake. Remember, don't buy the one you like. Buy what I like. Valerie, this year my birthday is on Saturday. Please keep your cards coming, Charlie. And come. Yes, don't run away. Come and celebrate together. I think you'll frighten your friends and family. You know how when people say, oh, yeah, your somebody's friend or family or whoever passed away, and they say, oh, how I wish that I can see them again. You really come back and see them, huh? I think they don't want to see you. Yeah. So can you imagine, 10 years later, will people be celebrating your birthday? Yeah, actually, kind of think about it, huh? When our parents, grandparents, when they pass away, we celebrate their death anniversary. But we don't celebrate their birthday, no. Like, as though the birth over you, don't forget about it. Yeah. So can you imagine, 2,600 and... how many years, 2653, right? Live? Yeah. 2,653 after you pass away. Do you think anyone will be celebrating your birthday? Do you think anyone will remember you for that matter? So, although the Buddha was born as a baby just like us, something must have happened for us to commemorate his birth even until today. And I'm here to tell you, my gut feel is, I don't think it's because he walked 7 steps, I don't think it's because he was able to speak when he was born. I mean, if you go by the sutta, he was able to walk 7 steps, you know. Not 1 step, not 2, not 6, 7. Not 8 also. If he was... okay, I shouldn't joke about Buddha. We're going to help for that. Every year during Vesak, there will be a lot of celebration, and sometimes if there's those kids' school, they will reenact the birth of the Buddha. Yeah, they will have a play, then they will reenact the birth, the enlightenment, and the passing. This celebration is not just about the birth, and we celebrate the birth after 2,563 years, not because he took 7 steps, not because he pointed his hand in the sky and said, 天上天下唯我独尊, 天上天下亦无比, and so on and so forth. No. As I said in many talks, if any of you, when you were born, if you even just say hello, you don't have to say a complete sentence, you know. You just have to come up and you look at the doctor. Hey, I think a doctor has a heart attack. All you have to do that is that, and you'll be an internet page. You'll be called the hello baby. Yeah, you just come up, hello. You just say hello, don't say anything else. So everybody you see, you say hello. When you see your mommy, you say hello, mommy. You become the hello baby. We don't celebrate the birth of the Buddha because of that. We celebrate his birth because of what he did after that. We also celebrate his birth because while he was born similar to us as a human, but his birth did not lead to suffering for himself and others. His birth did not come as a result of craving and attachment as well. Whereas for sentient beings, our birth come about because of craving and attachment. And our birth, being born from craving and attachment, leads to suffering, sorrow, lamentation, pain, distress, and despair. The whole mess of suffering. And this birth does not lead to more cycles of birth, more cycles of suffering. Whereas our birth leads to more. From the suttas, there was no mention about birthday cake for the Buddha. From the suttas, we also don't see the Buddha celebrating his birthday every year. Yeah? Have you all seen a sutta? Once in Savatthi, at Ananda Pitaka's park, Jeta's grove, yeah, Jetavana, the Buddha was there, and there was a large assembly of monks, and there was a birthday cake. Was there such a sutta? No. In the Buddha's time, actually, he didn't celebrate his birthday himself. Yeah. He spent his time instead, not on himself, but on the Dharma. Not on the Dharma as an end as well, but on the Dharma for people to learn. Effectively, we can say that from his birth, he spent this human life on sentient beings, on the welfare and benefit of sentient beings, as a teacher, as a doctor. He described himself as a teacher who is open-handed, not closed-fisted, a teacher who teaches what is needed for his students, for those who are willing, who are ready to hear, for them to be free of suffering. He teaches for the welfare and benefit of others. He teaches not to have more disciples. He teaches not to cause suffering, not to cause fear, but to remove fear, remove suffering. The Buddha also described himself as the great doctor. He used that as a parable, as an analogy, that just as a doctor do an assessment, a diagnosis of a patient, the condition, the state, the illness, and thereafter prescribe suitable medication. And after that, has nurses to assist, to guide the patient in taking the medication. Similarly, the Buddha, as a doctor, he assesses the state, the condition of sentient beings, of those who may hear, those with little dust in their eyes. He looks at them and he considers what is the current state of these sentient beings. What are the wholesome faculties that are matured? What are the unwholesome faculties that is present? What is a suitable approach, a suitable method of practice that this person can employ? What is the best way to approach this person? And in this way, then he prescribed to them suitable teachings for their well-being. And as a result, if you look at the suttas, we actually don't see a fixed syllabus that he get everybody to go through. Since coming back to Singapore in 2006, many students have approached me and asked me, "Shifu, can you conduct a more structured class?" Sometimes they don't say that immediately. They say, "Shifu, is there a way to learn Buddhism that's more structured?" Yeah. They say this out of respect, yeah, so that it doesn't seem like I'm not so structured. Then sometimes I'm quite direct. Then I ask them, "Why? Is it because you find that the classes I conduct is not so structured?" And then they say, no. But I'm telling you this anyway. My classes are usually not very structured. Yeah. I admit, I take full credit for that. Because I learned from the Buddha. I'm not blaming Buddha. But there's a reason why the Buddha taught in that way. And it is because Everyone he meet has different needs and different affinity and inclination. Everyone he meet is at different stages of the path. It is like if a doctor were to prescribe the same medication for every patient he meet, I think he will end up killing everybody. Can you imagine if you go to see a doctor and without looking at you, without any diagnosis, he just tell you chemotherapy. And you'll be like, wait, am I at the right place? Yeah, you are at the clinic. But why chemotherapy? Oh, this is a full set. This is the one that can cure the worst illness, so it should work for everybody. Yeah. Go through the comprehensive course, the whole set. Yeah. You should be okay after that. Yeah. For most people, if you go through that full set, you'll be quite okay. Because you'll be dead. You won't have any more illnesses after that. If we look at the sutta, the Buddha tailor-made different prescriptions of the Dharma for different people. He prescribed from his own understanding, his wisdom, and from his vast knowledge. While he knows the whole path, he don't just down the whole path and shove it down everybody's throat. He don't go around telling everybody, come, all in, what are you waiting for? Stop clinging to your son, stop clinging to your wife, your daughter, your husband. Yeah, give up your career. No, he don't do that. Instead, he assessed each person's propensity, ability, and his current state. And so you see that for some individuals, he prescribed to them the practice of worldly merits. He teach them how to practice giving, to soften their heart, to open up their hearts, to cultivate this kindness. And through this initial practice, then strong clinging to material things is loosened. And after that, when he observed that this group of individuals have gradually laid the foundations, then he further teach them, now that you have practiced in this way, there is actually more to come. In a way, he enticed people, you know. To a group of merchants, the Buddha told them, if you practice worldly merit, you can enjoy sensual pleasure. But beyond that, then the Buddha told them, but getting worldly sensual pleasure is still inferior. If you were to then practice wholesome precepts, yeah, practice sila, from doing dana, then practice sila, then you can be reborn in the higher states and enjoy even more supreme sensual pleasure. Now, it will sound quite unthinkable today that the Buddha would advise someone to do that. But that's what he did for some people. Once they have observed precepts to a certain degree, he finds that their mental faculties are mature, then he guides them and tells them, and in a way again entices them, telling them, if you think that worldly, this heavenly sensual pleasure that you will enjoy in future is supreme, do not be mistaken. There is something even better than that. If you were to go beyond just practicing sila, precepts, morality, and you learn to quieten your mind, learn to steal your mind away from the clutches of sensual pleasure. Okay? Before that, the Buddha keep telling them, you do this, you do that, you get sensual pleasure. But once they can get it already, they tell them, actually there's something even better. Before they can even do it, you tell them it's not good enough, then what are they going to do? So the Buddha in this way invites them, then tells them there's another form of bliss and joy that is even more supreme. And you can attain that only if you give up your sensual pleasure. You give up your sensual pleasure, quieten your mind, then you develop samadhi, you attain jhana, and and you will experience something even more supreme. And in this way, the Buddha guides them from worldly merit, yeah, that is mundane, that is sensual, to another stage, which is still worldly, but not within the first five sensual pleasures. Move them towards jhana. And once they can reach first jhana, the Buddha guides them to attain second, third, and fourth. At the stage when they can reach fourth jhana, then the Buddha highlights to them, yeah, as though like a caravan leader leading them from darkness to light, yeah, bringing them out of the cave, out of a cavern, yeah, and showing them the way out. Then the Buddha teaches them beyond the very subtle bliss of equanimity in the fourth jhana, there's something beyond that. That you can actually attain something even more subtle and supreme, Nibbana. So the Buddha don't just go around telling everybody, come, attain Nibbana, attain Nibbana. But rather, he gives different parts of the teaching accordingly. As a result, when we go through sutta by sutta, you may find that there don't seem to be a structure or sequence. But it is only because it is tailored for each individual. So after his passing away, many masters collate different pieces of the teachings and develop what we call commentaries. Yeah? The commentaries to piece together in a certain structure and framework for individuals who have no background at all, to start all from zero to gradually go through that process. But what I found is that sometimes when you go through that, it is very helpful for us to have a complete set of knowledge. But if it were to just go through that and nothing else, we have only but knowledge. So when we learn the Dharma, we need to not just keep on thinking, I need to have a structured course. But we also need to ask ourselves, whether we go for a structured course or for this talk and that talk, where am I now? Which part of the path am I currently at? And ask ourselves, what do I need at this point in time? Because only then can we make a progress. Otherwise, we may have a lot of progress in terms of Dharma knowledge, but may not have much progress in terms of our eradication of defilements. In a way, I kind of skip past from birth all the way up. But half in between, I have mentioned about his enlightenment, yeah, and what he did with that enlightenment. He didn't just attain enlightenment and just disappear from this world. Because if the Buddha, after being born, at some point attained enlightenment and just disappeared, then nobody would know about him. But he teach not because he want to have people know about him. That was not his aim. He teach so that others can be free of suffering. In a way, we can say that the significance of Vesak is a celebration of the conquering of suffering. Much like in the scientific world, when penicillin was first discovered, yeah, it is mind-blowing, yeah, that before that, certain illnesses cannot be cured. Then there was this discovery. And from then on, we know for a fact that, okay, you just have a jab of this and certain things are cured. It doesn't cure everything in the case of penicillin. Yeah. The Buddha's enlightenment, I have to break your dreams, it doesn't cure everything also. If your computer breaks down, it doesn't cure it. But it can cure your impatience that may arise due to the breakdown. When the MRT breaks down, you cannot chant Namo Tassa Bhagavato and hope that the train will work. But it can help you make sense of this. It can help you to see that this is the nature of things. Whatever can work can also not work. Yeah? It is because of so much conditions that the train actually works. So when it doesn't work, well, it is to be expected, isn't it? Yeah? It can help us to make sure that the train in our mind, our train of thoughts continue smoothly and not have a hiccup. So don't come into Buddhism thinking that Buddhism can solve everything. Yeah, the Buddha didn't claim it can solve everything. He did state that and prove that and have many people affirm that it can help us end suffering. And for that, I think, I don't know about you, but for me, that is a very important part of this celebration of Buddhism. Because this conquering of suffering is not just a celebration for Buddhists, not just for Indians, yeah, not just for those who can find a Bodhi tree and sit down there, but for anyone, for those with little dust in their eyes, for those who are willing to have a good look at themselves and try this out. If one should do that, then this path to the deathless, this path is open, wide open, for all who care to try, not just for Buddhists, even if I dare say so, non-Buddhists. For just like penicillin or any medication, you don't need to be a medical student to use it. You don't need to be of a certain country or origin to be able to use it. You just have to try it out, yeah? Examine it, and follow the prescription. So I urge everyone to join me, not just for today, not just on Sunday, but every day. Also not just on Sunday SGC, to go on this journey of discovery, of conquering, of suffering. Happy Visa. So, what should we do now? This is the shortest talk I've ever given. And the most continuous one. We have 15 minutes left. Do you have any questions?
Yes. So when do we celebrate the Buddha's passing?
Huh?
When do we celebrate the Buddha's passing?
Ah, yes. Why do we celebrate the Buddha's great passing away? So, his passing away is celebrated also because while all of us being born is subject to aging, sickness and death, the Buddha, when he was born, he was also subjected to that. However, our death is different from the Buddha's so-called death. Sometimes people may feel, actually, I. Last time I always sometimes feel, pass away, pass away. Why do we have a special term for it? Pari Nibbana. Then Buddha's even more special. Maha Pari Nibbana. Yeah, it seems like it's just a lot of special terms. But it's not just a matter of giving it a special name to make it special, but more because it's special, that's why we give it a special name. The question is, in what way is it special? It's special because for unenlightened beings, after we pass away, in the Buddhist teaching, we say that we don't just disappear. We don't just disappear. Our craving and attachment compels us, triggers us. Again, I want to use that word. We are so desperate. We are so desperate, you know. You know why I say we are so desperate? Because if you think about it, if you're not very desperate, why would anyone take rebirth in the animal realm? If we're not desperate, we will only take rebirth only when we have a chance to be reborn in, as a human or in the heavenly realms. In the Buddhist teaching, it said that sometimes when we think about lower realms, we tend to think of it as being false. But in some texts, it describes that what is forcing us to take rebirth in those realms. It is our own habitual tendency. Or habitual tendencies that compels us, almost as though we have no choice. But actually, we have a choice. It's just that we are so used to this particular choice, to act in an unwholesome way, to think in a certain way. So it seems as though we have no choice. You know how sometimes you see people around you, and you find like, aiyah, why you react this way? You know that guy or that girl or whoever is always like that one. How many times you want to torture yourself? We always, we are very wise, huh? At that point in time, we are like a Buddha. Except no pillow, no. We are so wise to give that, but why you like that? Yeah? And the person, you think I want? The person say that to me, no. I cannot take it, cannot. And then, brah. For those who are not in this state, it seems like you have a choice, man. No, I have no choice. He said that. Do we really have a choice or no choice? Actually, we have choice. But through repeated habituation, mental habituation, in a way we can say that this is a form of cultivation, but it's the unwholesome cultivation. We are cultivating, every day we are cultivating a lot of bad habits. Yeah. Or maybe I don't call it bad habits, but we are cultivating habits that don't help us in our happiness. Certain way of thinking, certain way of mindset, the person say like this, I feel hurt. We are so used to feeling hurt when this happened or that happened. Yeah. We don't realize that, hey, why do I have to feel hurt? Can I not feel hurt when that happens? But because we are so used to it, you say that right. We are so used to it, so it seems like we have no choice. But think about it. Like now, let's say, Zhou Ping. I don't love you. Do you feel anything?
Say no.
Okay. Yeah. But you see, Sean, I don't love you.
Okay.
You're okay, right?
Yeah, okay.
Now, if Cheryl say this to you, there's only one correct answer. Not okay.
Yeah, okay.
Don't give Dharma answer at this point. Give Dharma answer tonight, you jialat. No, this afternoon, you jialat. So you see, just because he hears something doesn't mean that he must respond this way or that way. But when we are so used to that person A must say something to me, say certain things to me, and person B should not, we are used to it. And then we, in a way, lock ourselves into that kind of mindset. And all this bit of habitual tendencies here, there, all this accumulate. To the point where, when a person passes away, it seems like there's no choice. No choice. No choice because we feel like if we don't stay alive, wow, it's a big deal. We feel like must stay alive. Okay, no, have to. So, about to die, have to be cockroach. Cannot be human, okay, I'm cockroach. I mean, I don't know how that happens. Whereas for the Buddha and the Arhats, it's different. Even before they pass away, they are very clear about this. They are very clear about one thing. They see clearly that they don't hold on to, cling on to anything in this world. Have you ever eaten something so nice, you feel like you must try it again? Maybe it's laksa. Maybe it's char kway teow. Or maybe it's not food that is your poison. Maybe it's someone that you must see again. Die, must see again. If you don't see, you feel miserable. Let me ask you, have you all ever felt that way? Say yes. All of us. All of us. But let me ask you, when you're in the toilet, can you still shit? Do you bring that person to the toilet to shit? You don't want. Correct or not? When you bathe, okay, don't tell me about that. But, I mean, when you go to work, you bring your whole family there, you also don't want, correct or not? So it's not true that you can, you die must see that person all the time. No one. There are so many times in our whole day, whole life, that we are apart, but we condition ourselves. We keep telling us, I need the person, I must see this person, I have to have that food, I must go for a holiday, I don't know holiday, I will feel it. Must die go back 20, 30 years ago, 40 years ago. Most Singaporeans don't go for so much holiday. First, just they go Malaysia, Genting, Cameron Highlands, Thailand. For Thailand, big deal. Why? Oh, 140, that's why I go Thailand. You know, nowadays, it's no longer about whether I go for a tour. Nowadays is, where am I going? I'm Greenland again. I went before, I don't want to go in. Last time when we talk about Greenland or Iceland, we learned in geography, you know. Yeah. We learned about Iceland and Greenland from Discovery Channel. Yeah? From those British what you call that, documentaries, you know. Yeah. When I was a kid, like there's nobody who ever say, hey, next year shall we go Greenland? Or shall we go Iceland? Then look at the northern lights. You know? But gradually we feel like hey, do that. Everybody go Iceland. Hey, you never go Iceland before. Shopping, have you gone to Iceland? Never. Oh, okay. Sorry, I'm there. You work so hard for what? Never go. Actually it's okay, isn't it? Are you okay? Say yes. Yes. But because of all this conditioning, we get so used to it. A lot of our suffering comes from this. So even when they were alive, the Buddha, the enlightened Bodhisattvas, the Arahants, they know clearly already. They are not stuck in this cycle. They don't have that clinging on. Die, must stay alive. Die already. Oh, cannot be heavenly beings, cannot be human beings. Cockroach also can. No. But there's a twist to this. In the Mahayana teachings, we say that the enlightened ones, once they have gone to a very high level of enlightenment, they are indeed not stuck to this cycle, this endless cycle of birth and death. They don't have that inner yearning. I die, must stay alive, must be born here, I want to be born there, I want to do this or that. No more. No more craving and attachment. But yet, the twist is, because they can do this, then they can truly choose to be born here or there. Because for us, we don't have a choice. Our choice is based on our desire. Look around yourself. Look at the clothes you wear. Do you have a choice? We feel like we have a choice. Sifu have a choice. We have more choice than you, Sifu. Every week you wear the same color. Actually, it's the same robes. Not even just the same color. Same one. Never wash them all. Sifu, we have more choice than you. We can buy Uniqlo, we can buy Banana Republic, Bango, Orange, Pineapple. We can choose so much. But let me ask you, have you ever bought something that you consciously don't like? No, you have no choice. You can only choose what you like. Have you ever gone to a food court and purposely choose the one that you don't like? You have less choice than me. Whatever people give, I can choose. I can choose to eat. Or rather, I will just eat. I will eat whatever that's given, even I don't like or like, I can choose. I have real choice. We have real choice. So the enlightened ones, because they stop following their desire, they actually have more choice. But then, simple, if it's not based on their desire, then how is someone supposed to choose? So then this is the other fallacy. We are so used to choosing based on desire, we don't realize that there are other ways to choose. But in fact, I correct myself. We know. We know of another way to choose. Those who are parents, you would know. Those who have someone very close to them, probably would know also. Because many times, parents, they choose to go somewhere, not because they like, but because their children like. Many parents choose to eat at certain places, not because they like. You think a lot of all those parents like McDonald's, because the kid wants McDonald's. So in a way, they move slightly away from the usual based on their own desire. But it's actually extension of their desire. Because they desire for the happiness of their child, so they are willing to give up their own desire. Otherwise, you think, oh, how come all those parents go and watch Toy Story, la, what? Go to Disneyland? Huh? Already 40, 50 years old, still go to Disneyland? Mickey Mouse? Or go and watch Frozen. What's that song? The Frozen song? How to sing? Let it go, let it go. When I saw that, I was like, oh, Buddhism has changed. Buddhism is mainstream now. So in a way, we know as well. Initially, it may come as a surprise. How can it be possible? But actually, we are doing that. Except that we are doing for out of our love for our children. For love for those that we care. The difference between the Buddha and us is it's not selfish love. It's not love with attachment. Love for just this or that person. Not just love for, oh, I like, then I love. I don't like, then I don't love. Oh, that person is nice to me, then I love. Oh, that person not nice to me, then I don't love. This is the difference between the Buddha, the enlightened Bodhisattvas, and Arhats. They have more choices. And they choose not based on their own desire, but for their love, based on the love and compassion for not just those that they are close to, but for all sentient beings, even those who are harming them. And in this way, we celebrate the Buddha's passing as well. Because when he passed away, he don't just go to the next destination based on their own desire. In the classical teaching, in the Pali Canon, it says that he entered into Maha Parinibbana, the great cessation, complete end of suffering. But in fact, in the Buddha's time, when people ask the Buddha, what happened to the Tathagata after that? The Buddha don't answer that question. The Buddha say, the moment you ask that question, you're missing the point. Because your mindset in asking that question goes against the teachings that leads to enlightenment. That question of where the Buddha go to after passing is based on the notion that the Buddha, it can be identified based on the five aggregates. The Buddha, even an alive, does not identify with the five aggregates as who he is. So in that way, in so many ways, his birth, his enlightenment, and final passing, the great passing, is significant. But it is not significant to everybody. It is significant, I don't say that it's significant to Buddhists also, but it's significant to those who see suffering in their life, see suffering in this world. Not all of us have a lot of suffering. Actually, a lot of us are quite happy. Yeah? I mean, you all come for SGC, are you really happy, right? Say yes. This is a compulsory answer. But sometimes we may encounter a bit of stress, a bit of, you know, worry in our mind. So sometimes happy, sometimes not so happy. Yeah. And then I forgot what I want to say. What was the part before this?
Yes. See something.
Well, very good. She was taking notes. Yes. Visa is significant, not just to Buddhists, yeah, but for those who see the suffering and start to want to take responsibility of their own suffering and happiness. And if you do, don't just do it on Vesak Day. Do it every day. We will now... Do you want to offer candles now or later? Okay, let's put our palms together. Okay. Check. Is it broken?
It is. Yeah.
You think it's broken?
But it's like it's okay.
Can you imagine if you gave a talk halfway and then you forget what you were saying? Would you feel stressed or embarrassed? Yeah. But if you forget what? I mean, some students, they may feel, oh, it's so good, what's wrong, it's so good. But I'm currently at this state, I thought you were. You know what I mean? Then you have no stress. If you try to act like something else that you're not, then you'll be stressed. You know, you try to put up as though you are so enlightened or so clear-minded all the time. Then you'll be stressed. Otherwise, no stress. Stress comes from our own self-expectation, you know. Oh, that was okay. Luckily, she don't take photo when I go toilet. So, I want to invite, I think among you all, I want to invite the most senior to come and have a candle lighted. And the rest, join me to chant. Namo Bunshi Shi Jia Mo Ni Fo.
本是释迦牟尼佛，南无本是释迦牟尼佛，南无本是释迦牟尼佛，南无本是释迦牟尼佛，南无本是释迦牟尼佛，南无本是释迦牟尼佛，南无本是释迦牟尼佛，南无本是释迦牟尼佛，南无本是释迦牟尼佛，南无本是释迦牟尼佛，南无本是释迦牟尼佛，南无本是释迦牟尼佛，南无本是释迦牟尼佛，南无本是释迦牟尼佛，南无本是释迦牟尼佛，南无本是释迦牟尼佛，南无本是释迦牟尼佛，南无本是释迦牟尼佛，南无本是释迦牟尼佛，南无本是释迦牟尼佛，南无本是释迦牟尼佛，南无本是释迦牟尼佛，南无本是释迦牟尼佛，南无本是释迦牟尼佛，南无本是释迦牟尼佛，南无本是释迦牟尼佛，南无本是释迦牟尼佛，南无 摩尼佛，南无。 释迦牟尼佛南无本师释迦牟尼佛南无本师释迦牟尼佛南无本师释迦牟尼佛释迦牟尼佛南无本师释迦牟尼佛南无本师释迦牟尼佛南无本师释迦牟尼佛南无本师释迦牟尼佛南无本师释迦牟尼佛南无本师释迦牟尼佛本师释迦牟尼佛南无本师释迦牟尼佛南无本师释迦牟尼佛南无本师释迦牟尼佛南无本师释迦牟尼佛南无本师释迦牟尼佛南无本师释迦牟尼佛释迦牟尼佛南无本师释迦牟尼佛南无本师释迦牟尼佛南无本师释迦牟尼佛南无本师释迦牟尼佛南无本师释迦牟尼佛
愿消三障诸烦恼，
愿消三障诸烦恼，
愿得智慧真明了，
愿得智慧真明了，
不愿罪障悉消除，
不愿罪障悉消除，
世世常行菩萨道，
世世常行菩萨道。
阿弥陀佛，
阿弥陀佛。